a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We're now live on the internet. For those five people listening, potentially, I'll recap briefly. This is the first day of our session, Legislative Procedure Committee. We do have a quorum present. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting? Motion by Senator Brown. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Rabe. All those in favor of approving the minutes will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Minutes are so approved. First item on the agenda is discussion and action on amendment to Joint Rule 7-12, correcting an error in an internal reference. Everybody should have a handout of this proposed joint rule. And we do now have Representative Hunhoff and Senator Frerichs joining us, and as well as Representative Bartling. So, Madam Secretary, please add them to the being present. On the handout on the back side, you should have the proposal to Joint Rule 7-1.2. In reading the Red Book this fall, I came across a rule that referenced another rule, and that rule that it referenced was 6D-2. It appeared that it should be referencing 6D-1. Staff at Legislative Research Council agreed with me, and therefore we proposed this rule for legislative procedure. Any questions from the committee? I'll give you just a few seconds to take a look at it, and if you want to look in your red books and see the rule that it references, the section we're looking at changing deals with committee action on bills and resolutions, and the language is, unless otherwise ordered under Joint Rule 6D-2, all bills or resolutions shall be referred to one of the standing committees. 6D-2 states, deals with referral of resolutions of disapproval. The previous rule deals with referral of bills and resolutions to standing committees. That is the rule that should have been referenced in Joint Rule 7-1.2. Any questions or comments from the committee? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion on adoption of this proposal. Senator Rave moves, and second by Representative Wick. Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor of the motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion carries. That rule is therefore adopted and amended. The next item is a discussion and action on adding a new section to Joint Rule 6A, establishing requirements for certain letters of intent issued by the Appropriations Committee. And this comes from the Executive Board. Any comments on this? Whose is this, if anybody? Okay. Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to be. If Representative Turberville or Senator Cutler were present in the legislature here today, they would be here speaking to you about this issue. And Senator Teason had planned to be here, but he has another meeting that he just went to. I am the ranking minority member on the e-board, and I made the motion to include the issue of letters of intent in our rule book. And essentially, this issue arose from a disagreement between the House and the Senate at the end of last legislative session over how the money that was appropriated to the tech schools was to be used. For example, was it to be ongoing for scholarships, or was it just a one-time appropriation in support for the four tech schools? Because they did not agree between the House and the Senate, Representative Carson brought it to E-Board, I believe in April, and asked us to resolve the matter. We chose not to, even though it was a close vote. I think it failed by one vote, not to have the issue on our agenda. So we, as the executive board of the legislature, did feel it was our prerogative to override the the special committee on appropriations that meets during the interim. Representative Turbeville felt the issue needed to be resolved, and it seemed like it was just creating some disagreement between the two houses. So he brought forth two proposals to E-Board. One would be to make a legislative change to clarify what letters of intent are and could do. And then the other one that I suggested was to include it in the rule procedure. Primarily, my intent was to have it as an addendum to the general bill for the letters of intent, and that would mean they would have to be written or determined prior to the final vote on the G-Bill by the total legislative body. Now, Senator Tiedemann felt there wasn't enough time for that, that maybe the Special Committee on Appropriations needed some time to rehash the issues before they actually do the letters of intent. And some of his comments are in the minutes from our November 16th meeting, if you need to go back and refer to those. I felt that most of those letters of intent in past are decided within 30 minutes of sine die, quite frankly, and it's not that big a deal. And I feel as a legislator who's never served on Appropriations Committee that I ought to be able to see those letters of intent and what they actually mean. So if I'm back home and a constituent calls me and wants to know whether the appropriation to the tech schools is meant to be ongoing for scholarships for a student that may be entering into a two-year program, will that money be there the second year? I should be able to have the information to answer that question. Now, the issue in front of you, I think, today is whether it's appropriate to put language in the general bill that would direct policy in regards to just spending authority. So that's a fair question. I believe it personally would be appropriate if the language is put in the back of the general bill, or the letters of intent are put as in an addendum in the back of the general bill. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Senator Lucas. Any comments from LRC staff on having addendums on bills like that?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we really don't have a position, obviously. I mean, this is really a policy decision for you guys to make. We can do it if that's what it needs, if that is what your wishes are. So that's all I can. That's the staff's position. We can do it if you need it.
Sorry about that. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think perhaps there's some confusion or maybe misunderstanding. As someone who has served on the Appropriations Committee, I would like to share a few things with you in terms of letters of intent and what their purpose is. The first thing that we need to understand about a letter of intent is that there is no legal force whatsoever to a letter of intent. There is no legal force. A letter of intent simply is a mechanism which allows, through the Appropriations Committee, an expression of policy. It kind of goes without precedent, at least I've never seen this in terms of our state's history. Typically, we leave our general bill, the bill that funds state government, without policy attached to it. So this would certainly be a departure from that course. In terms of the way these letters of intent function, I can tell you that in my experience on the Appropriations Committee, and this is quite frankly why I'm a little surprised to see this measure before us, as a legislature, once we reach sine die and we convene, and we've adopted a general bill that's going to appropriate for state government, we have very few mechanisms as a legislative body to be able to redirect agencies or different parts of state government if we feel that they're not carrying out the wishes that we had tried to express during the legislative session. Where I've seen these letters of intent used most effectively, it's in those cases. So if we were to see perhaps an agency that we thought maybe didn't quite understand what we had appropriated the money for, we can put a letter out there that says, hey, guess what? This is what we actually wanted to have happen. As I indicated, there's no legal force, but there's certainly an implied threat that if those wishes are not carried out, come the next legislative session, certainly those dollars and perhaps other dollars will not be appropriated. So we often sit up here on the third floor and talk about how the legislature has given much of its authority and power away without real good reason. And quite frankly, I think if we were to adopt this particular rule today, that's the only thing we've accomplished. We've yet put another notch out of the authority of the legislature to be able to sit up here and peer and govern. So with that, I would certainly urge the committee to strongly consider a no vote on this.
Any further comments from the committee or questions of Senator Lucas? Representative Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this would be directed to Senator Lucas or perhaps Senator Brown. Is there any guidance, either statutorily, in regs, or in any nature, on what a letter of intent is, how it's structured, what its intent is, who has the authority to create one? Is there anything written anywhere on letters of intent?
Go ahead, Senator Brown.
Representative Lust, there's really not. It's simply something that was devised. From what I'm told in history, it was perhaps at times when we maybe had a weaker governor and the legislature needed to exert some authority over certain cabinets or departments that the governor wasn't doing. If you wanted to boil it down, I guess I see it simply as the freedom of expression or language for the Appropriations Committee to be able to do that. I'd also point out that there are two things that are unique to the Appropriations Committee. Number one, in order to adopt a letter of intent, it requires a majority vote. And number two, I would keep in mind that if there's concern about division between the House and the Senate, the Appropriations Committee is unique in that a few years back we adopted Joint Rule 7-12. If 7-12 is invoked, it allows the chair, the chair essentially at that point has to split the votes of the senators and of the representatives. And if the representatives did not feel that that letter was appropriate, their no vote on that, despite what the Senate would say, would essentially kill that letter of intent. So especially with that mechanism in place, I really struggle to see how there has to be any kind of division between the House and the Senate, because it seems like that would certainly give – that rule alone fixes the issue that it seems that we're trying to get at here today.
If I can, Mr. Chairman, there is no provision for letters of intent other than the fact that they are mentioned in a provision that affects the executive board, which allows the executive board to take some action in regard to letters of intent along with other administrative actions. Since this is a historical document, and there is no history for anyone else doing one, you would have to develop your own history. So I would probably say at this point, no, other committees can't do this. It is because the letters of intent are so inextricably tied to matters financial and issues financial, it seems to be their unique purview to do this sort of thing. I suppose the Ag Committee could write a letter directing the Secretary of Agriculture to carry out a program consistent with the discussions that people had in the committee and so on. But in reality, you begin to blur the lines between an executive function and a legislative function. And letters of intent, as Senator Brown pointed out, are of little legal force until, of course, you bring your budget back to the Appropriations Committee the next year, which is where the real force lies. And if you don't have another shot, and that's, you do what you can do, you enforce what you can enforce. Could Ag Committee do that? Probably not, other than kill, say, Secretary of Ag's bill. It would be retribution rather than a direct force. So long answer to a short question, I'm sorry. But I would say probably in the greater scheme of things, probably not.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Any further comments, Senator Nordstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the Senator Lucas, for Senator Lucas. If we were to take this tool away from the legislature, if we were to take this tool away from the Appropriation Committee, are there any tools left for us as the Appropriation Committee to communicate to agencies and departments other than the general bill?
I don't believe so, unless it would go back to the discussions that were held during the spending in front of the Appropriations Committee. Now, one kind of technicality here, it isn't the Appropriations Committee, it's the Special Committee on Appropriations that writes the letters of intent, which in nearly all cases is the Appropriations Committee, but they don't meet or have authority until after the sine die of legislative session. That's when the letters of intent are done. And to resolve the issue, because we don't, and Senator Teason will say this, and everybody on the executive board, I believe, we don't want to see, whoever's on the executive board next year would not want to see that issue come back, this issue come back. So if there's another way of doing that, one way would be to have the clarity, in my opinion, of what those letters of intent are, whether they maybe are kept out of the general bill, but they're available for all legislators before sine die, and that would be taking away, technically having the letters of intent done by the full committee on appropriations instead of the special committee on appropriations.
Okay. Any further comments? Follow up, Senator Nordstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I see this bill as doing two things. And one is allowing us to put intent inside the general bill, which I don't know if we need that authority or not. And the second thing is removing the authority from the Appropriation Committee to express its will. I guess the question for the senator is do you intend, is both parts of the amendment part of your desire, or is one? You're accomplishing two things. I guess the question is, are both important to you?
Well, my intent is not to put this in law. You mentioned the word bill, so it's not, right. We're not amending the statute by any means. It's just our rules, the way we operate here within the legislature. My intent is to make sure all legislators know the information, they know how it's intended to spend the money before we go home to deal with our constituents. And secondly, when we come back, secondly, for the governor, I think it does send a message to the governor that it was our intent, if that money is to be ongoing, that it be included in the next year's budget. Although the governor, as was indicated by previous speakers, would not have to honor that, but it would certainly be an indication that the legislature is moving in that direction and would hope that those programs would continue on an yearly basis.
Okay. Any more comments and or action? Representative Hunoff.
Just a comment, if that's appropriate. You know, I know this issue grew out of a disagreement between the House and the Senate, but I think the underlying issue and really how this issue really came to be, seems to me, is that we're trying to fund, start a program in the general bill, which is inappropriate already in rule and law. And if we would pass this, although I think it's well-intended, obviously, but if we would pass this, I agree with Senator Brown. I mean, it's really an issue of strength between the legislature and the executive branch. And it's usually not legislators. In this case, it was legislators, but usually it's not legislators who are trying to put new programs and hide them in the general bill. It's our friends in the executive branch. And if we do this, we'll just encourage that by giving letters of intent the power of law. So I would hope we'd strengthen the legislative branch and defeat this issue.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Any further comments and or action? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to table it doesn't have a number, but the current item up for discussion.
Is there a second? Okay, there's a motion by Senator Olson, second by Senator Rave. That is a non-debatable motion. We'll have to do the roll call for the Senate and the House separately. Would take a majority by both to pass, or it could fail by one chamber. Is that correct?
If you do it here, by tabling motion, it'll take, yes, if you want to have them, it'll have to be, well, you're going to have it backwards. I mean, right. if your motion to table is split and you don't, both houses don't agree, then the motion to table fails.
Okay, we're talking about a joint rule, so we'd have to have a majority of each chamber approve the rule. The current motion before us is to table. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Bartling.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Lust.
No.
Wick.
Aye.
Wink. And Representative Gosch.
No.
Then I have Senators Frerix.
No.
Heineman.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
White.
Aye.
And Brown. Aye. So in the House, I have 4 ayes, 3 nays, and in the Senate, I have 6 ayes and 1 nay.
Yeah, that motion carries. That proposal is tabled. We'll move on to the third item, which is a discussion on the proposed amendment to Joint Rule 12-6, clarifying the need for a supermajority vote when voting on sunset sections in tax imposition statutes. Any discussion on this proposal? Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the unique provisions that we have in our Constitution is a requirement that if a tax is going to be imposed by the legislature, that it's going to require a two-thirds vote of both bodies of the legislature. Given there are some circumstances, though, that I think are a little bit unique and have maybe raised the question as to whether there's a loophole in the way that works. And let me give you an example. Today we could propose to impose a tax, and if that were to come up, it would require a two-thirds vote of both bodies. Let's say that in order to get that tax passed, folks were okay with the general concept on a limited duration, but really wanted to see how this was going to play out. Or perhaps the tax was only for a limited purpose. We could think back to the days when we had a limited tax to raise funds for the ready effort. We could put a 2-year sunset on that particular tax. The issue that arises is what happens 2 years down the road when presumably some of us may not be reelected or back here. Even though we got the two-thirds vote today, and that was based on the premise that this was a limited tax in nature, there does exist the possibility that 2 years from now, someone could decide to amend or repeal that sunset provision. Certainly, I think there's good people can disagree about whether that would require a majority vote or a two-thirds vote of the legislature. This rule is an effort to try to clarify that would actually take a two-thirds vote because, in essence, from my viewpoint, we are imposing, again, a tax in a period of time that it was not originally adopted. I will tell you that I do think this rule fix is maybe a temporary in nature type fix, and it would probably be my intent this legislative session to bring a joint resolution to take a look at the Constitution to clarify that there so it was done on a more permanent nature. However, I do think if we were to adopt this rule, it could effectively clarify this issue for us for the next 2 years, realizing that if we were to suspend the rules, that would require a two-thirds vote as well. So effectively, there is a safeguard there. With that, I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Any questions for the senator or any further proponent testimony for this proposal? Representative Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Senator Brown on the wording. If I'm correct, you've started this provision off with any repeal of or amendment to a provision. So if that amendment is not related to the amount of the tax or the time frame, that would still require two-thirds?
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At least my intent, and I think that this is still worded correctly, it deals specifically with the provision that ends the tax if there were a sunset date. So the intent would be that if you tried to repeal that date or amend that date to add another 5 years, so we're talking about a provision which automatically abolishes the imposition of a tax. The two-thirds requirement, I guess, I don't think would necessarily apply in cases where, let's say that we were, we had a four-year tax that was in place and we're in year two and we needed to clarify some other language, but we're not changing the amount or the duration of that tax. I don't think this provision, in my view, would apply.
Any follow-up?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in a situation where you're seeking to repeal, and if the repeal were not successful and there was a motion to extend, that would also require extend the sunset. That would require two-thirds as well.
Yes, and that's why I have that language. Not only do I talk about the repeal, but we talk about the amendment to a provision.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further comments, questions, or proponent testimony on this provision? Seeing none, any opponent testimony on this provision? Seeing none, any action on this proposal? Representative Lust.
Mr. Chair, I move do pass.
Second. Moved by Representative Lust, seconded by Senator Olson. Any further discussion on that motion? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bartling. Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Wick.
Aye.
Wink. Frerichs.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
White.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Gosh.
Aye.
13 ayes, 1 excused.
That proposal is passed. We now move on to our fourth and final item. We're having a handout go around now of the 2013 legislative calendar. Senator Brown, do you want to discuss that proposal while this handout is being disseminated?
In particular, what I would like you to take a look at as you get your calendar, it's Legislative Day 11, which would be January 24th. The issue that I would like to raise with this particular committee is if you look at the day previous to that, Legislative Day 10, that's the last day for our unlimited introduction of bills, so you can introduce as many bills as you would desire to. Typically, we've had about a three-day period after that where you're allowed up to three bills that any individual member could introduce. As I look at this calendar, my concern is that we have a deadline on the 24th, the very next day, of 5 p.m. to get those bills in with sponsors back to the LRC. My suggestion and my motion would be that we would move that particular deadline to Legislative Day 12, which is that Friday, thereby extending the members another day to collect the signatures that they needed for those bills, realizing that I highly doubt that most members are going to wait until 5 p.m. on that Friday to actually turn those in. The second point that I would raise to the committee is we'll have to see where we're at in the process, but typically on those days that are the last day of the week, we tend to shorten those days. So my supposition would be that we would probably be done early that day, and I doubt that most members are going to stick around until 5 o'clock to try and gather additional signatures when most of the members will probably not be here. I just think this would give the legislators a little more flexibility without hopefully creating too much of a burden for the Legislative Research Council staff.
I'll just turn it over to Jim Fry here for comment on that proposal.
Mr. Chairman, we can accomplish that task. That is, does not create a burden for us.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Frye. Any further comments on this proposal? Seeing none, the chair would just comment that I would agree and just emphasize again that I think since it's going to be a shorter day, session will that day on the floor essentially be the prayer, the pledge, go through some motions, resolutions, and adjourn for the day. Immediately following that, 95% or more of the legislators will leave the Capitol, and we'll have already turned in one of their final three bills, or any of their final three bills for that matter, I guess. And so really, to some extent, you're really only doing extending the deadline until noon on the 12th legislative day and not 5 p.m. But as proposed, it would be moving that to the 12th legislative day by 5 p.m. Any further comments? Seeing none, those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
I move
too fast. I apologize. Let's back up a little bit. We have a motion due pass by Senator Ray. I thought that was implied. Second by Senator Frerix. Senator, you just earned your per diem. Thank you.
No longer on the corner.
Any, Senator Ray, do you have any more comments on your motion? Okay. Those in favor of Senator Ray's motion will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bartling.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Wick.
Aye.
Wink. Frerix.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
White.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
13 ayes, 1 excused.
That motion passes. That rule calendar change is now adopted and made. That concludes our agenda. Any further comments from the committee? Mr. Co-Chair, any comments?
Just move to adjourn.
Okay, set. Motion to adjourn. Has it been seconded?
Second.
Second by Senator Olson. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.